Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Web Sleuths Radio. Today, we have a jam-packed true crime show that is not to be beat anywhere. Billy Jensen joins us. Now, Billy has a new Audible book out called Chase Darkness With Me, How One True Crime Writer Started Solving Murders. And if that's not enough, Billy Jensen is also the co-host of the number one podcast in the nation with Golden State Killer Detective Paul Holes, and that's called Murder Squad. Okay, now, if that's not enough, we even have Levi Page here. He is a wild man, basically, out of control, but I think we've lassoed him in just a little bit for this podcast. Levi has his own podcast called Crime and Scandal, and I'm proud to say Levi Page is my partner in a podcast called Into the Crime. It's just podcast mania. Anyway, here we go with Billy Jensen and Levi Page on Web Sleuths Radio. Welcome one and all to Web Sleuths Radio. We've been around so long that when we started Web Sleuths Radio, the word podcast had not been invented, and that's why we use radio, a little bit of useless information that will impress absolutely no one. But what will impress you are the guests that are on Web Sleuths Radio today. They are amazing and fabulous. We have somebody on who has been in the true crime citizen investigation area for a long time. And we all know him. We all love him. And now he has the number one podcast in the nation with former Golden State Killer Detective Paul Holes. Now, this podcast is called The Murder Squad, but there's even more. Bill Jensen has a new book coming out called Chase Darkness With Me. Billy was Michelle McNamara's collaborator, and Michelle, of course, wrote the incredible book on the Golden State Killer. Billy Jensen, my gosh, the
Hi.
Intro took up all
How
the time.
Doing,
How
Trisha?
Are you?
We've talked before even podcasts were a thing.
We did.
We've known each other before podcasts were a thing, and
a lot
of it's and, you know, the citizen detective community in web sleuths, I don't like to call it amateur detectives or amateur sleuths. I like to use the term citizen detectives. And, you know, a lot of good stuff has come out of web sleuths, and there's a lot of good people doing a lot of good work on there. And there's rules, too. And that's one of the things that I go over in my book is that there's rules that you need to follow. And we could talk about that in a little bit. But I'm really happy to be on the show.
Well, thank you very much, and everybody at Web Sleuths loves you, but I've got to tell you, you do have competition with Paul Holes. Everybody wants to marry him, take him away, and steal him. He is
I know, but he's all mine,
I mean,
and his wife.
Sorry, you had to pick like a good-looking, really popular detective. You're competing with him, man.
I understand I'm the Starsky to his Hutch in this partnership. I'm the John to his Hutch. I'm okay with that.
I love it. Also joining us today to keep things lively is Levi Page. And Levi has been doing his podcast, Crime and Scandal, for a long time now. And Levi and I do a podcast called Into the Case. It's going very, very well. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But Levi, how are you?
I'm doing great, Trisha. Thanks for having me on.
Good, good. Okay, we've got so much to talk about here. And Levi, feel free to jump in because sometimes I don't stop long enough to take a breath, so you're going to have to interrupt me. But Bill, let's start with you. You have eventually become Citizen Detective Guy, and you're known for that. You've written for Rolling Stone. You've done amazing things with journalism. How did it evolve into a Citizen Detective moniker, I guess?
Right. Well, what happened was, you know, I was writing stories with, you know, I was writing unsolved stories forever. You know, that's what I've been doing for the last 20 years. And when you write stories that are unsolved about murders or missing persons, they have no endings. So that has always been the bad thing about my career is that I wrote stories with no endings. Nobody wants to really read a story with no ending, but I was always trying to help, always trying to solve ones. When I saw the citizen detective community start coming up, on Web Sleuths and on Reddit and even in Facebook groups, I saw some really interesting things that they were finding. So I wrote a story on about the Luca Magnotta case from Rolling Stone. I wrote a story about the Maura Murray case for Boston Magazine and a few other ones, the gay bashing case in Philadelphia. And, you know, but I was also friends with Michelle. When Michelle passed suddenly, it got really dark for me. And I was sitting in bed one night and, you know, during the day, you can't make money on this just being a writer. Like that Rolling Stone article I wrote, I probably worked on it 9 months and I got like $5,000 for it or something. So you don't, you can't really make a living. So I was a digital executive and I still am, like I still consult for digital companies, and I know how to get people to click on stuff. That's always been my thing. Not clickbait, but bordering on that, but it's still good content, but that's what it is. And, you know, I was sitting in bed one night and I saw this, I couldn't sleep, and I just do what probably a lot of your listeners do and a lot of the people on Web Sleuths do. I started doing searches for unsolved murders, and I found this video on YouTube of this gentleman getting attacked in the street in Chicago. And somebody starts a fight with him. He tries to run away. The guy punches him and he lands in a crosswalk. And then about a minute later, a cab runs over his chest and kills him.
Oh, dear.
And
God.
The video was so clear, and I was like, well, they already did a press conference. They've already put this out. It was actually on a couple national news outlets. Why don't they know who this guy is? Mm-hmm. And I contact the family, and the family said the police aren't calling us anymore, which is something that I would get all the time whenever I would work in print. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, well, I came up with this sort of aha moment of, I think I can solve this using social media. I think I can find the right person who might know who this is. And it, lo and behold, it, you know, through a series of wild and crazy adventures, it worked. And I was able to identify the guy, and he was arrested. It took, you know, I identified him within 2 weeks, but it took about 5 months for them to actually find out where he was. I had to plead with the detectives to say that I know where he is. He's in Minnesota. You know, I knew his name and everything, but he's in Minnesota. You got to get a warrant for him. And then they finally grabbed him. And,
Billy, I'm going to stop. Yeah. I want to stop you right there. How did using social media help you solve this case, help you find this guy? What did you do?
So what I did was I started a Facebook page, and I wrote it in the name of the puncher, because I call him the River North Puncher here, and I put his picture as the avatar. And I bought targeted advertising. So I bought, you know, and the ad was the video, and I said, do you know who I am? Here's what I look like. These are all my pictures. And I bought targeted advertising about a mile radius around where it happened. But I also did Twitter, and I put I did a bunch of posts on Twitter, and I begged a couple people just to give me some retweets. I got a retweet after the retweets from a guy called Barstool Big Cat. After his retweet, somebody sent us a picture, and he said, I hope this helps. And it was a front-facing photo of this guy. And I thought he made it up. I thought he made it on his computer or something. I said, where'd you get this? And I was pleading with him to ask me to answer anything. And then he sent me a video, and he or one of his friends, he said it was one of his friends, was there. And I had a video of the picture from that time. And so from that video, I was able to go. I had a front facing shot. I had a really clear picture of him. And I was able to go through all the mug shots, which are available from Cook County, because they put them online. And I was able to find out who he was, found his Facebook page, and was able to track him from there.
Wow, that is amazing. And it was you alone starting it with other people helping you, buying that advertising, asking people for retweets. Sounds so simple now, but I bet back then...
Begging people for retweets, not just asking, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but back then you literally were flying by the seat of your pants. But
You did it.
Now, something you and I have touched on, and I'm going to give a little teaser here. Billy and I, actually, Billy is the star of a documentary coming out, and we can't say what it is, but or maybe we can. I don't know. But
I don't think we can yet. Yeah.
Okay. But I was very honored to be a very small part of the documentary. And while you and I met, we were talking about, and Levi, I'm going to bring you in here in just a moment. We were talking about how when we solve a case. Now, it is rare on Web Sleuths to solve cases, but we have helped before. And we actually helped in a big case called the Abraham Shakespeare. He was a homeless man who won the lottery, and then this woman came along, got him to sign power of attorney, murdered him, and took over his money. And I won't go into all the details, but basically a detective from that case came on Web Sleuths, loved what we were doing, said we were helping him. I have a glowing email from him. And then when it was solved and the woman was eventually in jail, she actually came on Web Sleuths and tried to defend herself. It was amazing.
When you went to call this guy, when you were doing your Rolling Stone article, they would not return the calls. And then I think it was their PR department sent you an email saying that Web Sleuths had nothing to do with it. We weren't involved in any way. And I was mortified because it looked like I was lying and I couldn't find that email. Mm-hmm. I finally found it, but it was too late. And I did send it to you. And he's just, I mean, he is really kissing our rear ends like you wouldn't believe, this detective.
Yeah.
And now they're denying it.
You know, it's crazy.
You have that a lot.
I've had that a lot. Yeah, I mean, I had one where they actually thanked me from the podium and said, because of the Facebook page that Billy Jensen, this is another case, because of the Facebook page that Billy Jensen put up and the campaign that he did, tips came in and then we were able to identify him. And they said it from the podium at the press conference. And then mm-hmm. when somebody was writing a story about me in Men's Journal, they backtracked on that and said, no, we already had that. And I don't know whether they were doing it because... I mean, they're on record at a press conference saying it, you know?
Of saying it. Uh-huh.
So it's strange. You don't know why they do it. At the end of the day, I just have to just say, you know what? The family knows and the person is behind bars and that's all that matters. You can't, I mean, one of the rules that I go over is that don't accept credit. Don't expect credit because
that's
it's going to be few and
right.
far between. Yeah.
And the thing is, you're right. You can't accept credit. And if you try to, they'll kick you in the ass rather than kiss it. And the thing is with the Abraham Shakespeare case and the cases that you have done, it makes us look like we're not telling the truth when we say we helped with that case. But I think happened in the
Go ahead. And the fact that you're still talking about the Abraham Shakespeare case, you guys definitely helped with that. You were digging up that stuff, and no pun intended, that's horrible, but you were digging up that stuff about what she was doing and finding, you know, the things that she was buying and the things that she was owning and everything like that. Nobody was working on that. And the fact that you did that and look at, Steubenville and Alexandria Goddard and her being able to capture the screen grabs of these awful teenagers with this raping this unconscious girl. I mean, that's the sort of stuff that that the citizens, you know, have been able to help with that you often see this tracking. But it's, you know, I mean, I have to tell you, it is great when, you know, sometimes I will reach out to a police department and it becomes a partnership. And then they're just like sending me everything. And they're just like, hey, call up the Facebook guy on this one. And then they're sending me ones that really are not good candidates for campaigns, but I never want to turn them down. So I'm doing like one from 10 years ago where we only have a sketch, which is incredibly hard to do. But I'll still do it and I'll still put $100 behind it or something. And, you know, it's just, but when you have that partnership, and I talk about this in the audiobook where, you know, I was chasing a guy in Mexico, the detective, and we had I've never met him before, great texting partnership, and it's like, oh, he's there, he's here, and going back and forth, and I go through that whole thing, and it was really just a great partnership because he got it. I mean, he understood how powerful. Yeah.
That's great. And Levi Page, let's bring you in on this. You have been around the citizen detective, the true crime, I guess, bursting on the scene on the internet. You were there at the beginning as well. Have you seen what Billy and I are talking about? I bet you have. I bet you've seen the cops that just can't bring themselves to say, yes, these people helped us and they did something we didn't do. You've seen it, right?
I have seen it. I've seen it a lot, Tricia. And Billy, do you think that law enforcement needs to utilize citizens detectives more? Do you think that's a tool that they can use? And how often do you think that they are accepting of that? They're willing to do that.
It's really a mixed bag. And yeah, I mean, part of the reason why I wrote the audiobook was because of that. It's not only to empower, you know, there's a whole section at the end of how to do this and a step by step and also going over the rules, but it's also for law enforcement. And I address law enforcement first and I say, listen, you've got 220,000 unsolved murders in America since 1980. You've got 5,000 new ones every year. You're not getting 5,000 new detectives every year. That's not happening. If you ask any detective the reason why they didn't solve a crime, a lot of them are going to say lack of resources. There's resources that are there. You're not going to be able to solve all of those, but you're going to be able to solve some of them. And not to mention the fact of, you know, I actually did an informal poll of detectives that I know, and I said, if you were to use citizens, what would you want to do? And they all said the same thing, digitizing old police files. And I can't tell you how many times that I've asked for an old police file and they said, oh, it was in the basement and then it got flooded. Or that was in the old downtown building. And when we moved, we threw them out. I can't tell you how many times that happened. And so the idea that you can get, especially now that we have the most educated, most skilled retiree force now entering the retiree force, which is the baby boomers, who are looking for things to do, bringing them in 20 hours a week to digitize old police files and make them searchable is going to be able to solve. And when I say digitize, I'm not talking about files from the 50s and 60s. I'm talking about files from the 80s and 90s when they weren't typing everything up and putting it in so it could get, you know, digitally scanned. I mean, these are, a lot of these are handwritten files. There's so much that could be done and so many crimes that could be solved in America because, but they're not in one system. You know, they're not in one kind of centralized database. And that's a big issue that we have. And that's one of the things that we can help with is this digitizing all these files that are just sitting, literally sitting in dusty police lockers.
And how would you go about trying to approach a police department? Because let's face it, there are egos involved, not all of them. There are a lot of great cops out there that welcome people from the internet and citizen detectives with open arms. But how would you suggest, and we'll get into your book, Billy, and your podcast as well, but how would you suggest people approaching them?
I tell you, the first time I ever did a cold case story more than 20 years ago, I remember the cop wasn't calling me back. And I remember my editor saying, yeah, you know, he's not going to call you back because you're calling out something that he failed at. And there's a potential for that. But what I'm trying to do is it just takes a couple police departments. And it's a couple police departments to say, let's dedicate one person to be a civilian liaison to bring some people in and start this program. And, you know, call up your police department and say, hey, you know, would you be willing to do this? I have, you know, it's probably better if you don't do it just by yourself. If you go and you get a bunch of your friends and say, like, listen, we've got 10 people. We can donate this many hours and we can do this. We can to help you, whatever you guys want help in, as long as it has to do with some crimes. And see what they say. If they come back and they say no, that's fine. But you know what? If we throw it up against the wall 20 times, one of them is going to stick. And all we've got to do is show that, boom. This one police department did it, and they utilized civilians, and they were able to solve this, this, and this. And then everybody's going to look at that and either say, let's do that, or the civilians are going to say, why aren't you doing that?
Exactly. Very good point. And I would think that maybe even smaller police departments might be more open to doing this. I don't know about you, Billy, but the couple of times I've had to deal with the – and I don't want to say the name of the police department. I'll just give you the initials. The LA Police Department. The few times I've dealt with them, I come away feeling like I've been beaten. Feel like I should go to my room in a timeout. I feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that smaller police departments are much more open. So maybe that's where we need to start. Is the small town police department?
No, I think you're right. Yeah, smaller police departments are often more open to it. Bigger police departments, I mean, especially with me, and I'm coming in as somebody that at least can say, you know, I always introduce myself as a victim's advocate, but I also do say I'm a journalist. At least they know that I have experience and I have a code of conduct and I know certain rules that I follow. But, you know, there's certain police departments, bigger police departments that are good to work with, L.A. sheriffs, NYPD. There's certain ones that are pretty closed off, like Chicago. But, yeah, when you get to the smaller ones that are, you know, really just probably six or seven people out there, they're looking for help, and they've got those cases that are out there. And, you know, everybody, you know, if I could have anything for this audiobook is for everybody to look around and take, you know, one separate case each and be able to say, all right, let me try and solve this. And it doesn't have to be a case of a missing, you know, white woman or a little white girl or a little white boy. I mean, the cases that I've helped solve are across the board in terms of race, and occupation. You know, you often see, especially in Hollywood, one of the discouraging things that I found in Hollywood that I knew, but you didn't know it really fully until you're actually in a room with producers when you're asking them, can we do this story? And then they say, no, this person is not a good ideal victim because they are not fight enough, or they're sex workers, or they're drug addicts. And I think that's bullshit. So,
yeah, it is.
You know, pick any, you know, the cases that you can pick, you know, don't just go for the sort of ideal victim, quote unquote, you know, go for, you know, every life is worth the same. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, just pick one and run with it.
Every daughter, every son has a mother, a sister, brother that is mourning their loss, their disappearance.
Yes.
And their pain is not any less painful than somebody who has a lot of money and is a high-profile kidnap victim. And it is disgusting. And Levi, you and I have talked about this a lot. We see this a lot with victims. If they're street workers, if they are sex workers, you might as well, you know, just put their file in the back, right?
You're correct.
Okay.
There's a lot of cases, Tricia, where if somebody is a prostitute, a sex worker, that they are treated as if they're subhuman, that their life is
mm-hmm.
not as important as a Natalie Holloway or a Lacey Peterson. And a lot of these sex workers are doing it because they need to make money and they're in
mm-hmm.
poverty and maybe they have a child to support. And that's the only thing, the only work that they can get. And it's extremely sad that they are treated the way that they are. And we've seen where they're often victims of serial killers because they're kind of easy prey. And serial
right.
killers know that, and they take advantage of that. And I think that cunning and how evil serial killers are, that they zone in on these victims that they think that society will care less about. And
mm-hmm.
it is extremely troubling. But I've noticed that more people over the years are paying attention to cases where sex workers fall victim to homicide and are trying to get them justice. I've noticed a big change over the recent years regarding that. Haven't you, Billy?
I have, yeah, which is great because, you know, there's been a couple things. There's been the switch over from calling it prostitution to calling it human trafficking. And
mm-hmm.
then there's been there's also the sex workers who are, you know, who might have used Backpage.com and Backpage.com and whatever what you thought of it was actually a really good resource for law enforcement because it was able to track these guys. And it mm-hmm. being gone, it's become a little bit more of the Wild West again. But they definitely could have done Backpage could have done a little bit more to track and to identify particularly the pimps. And it's the pimps who you want to go after. And you're seeing that now. You're exactly right. You're seeing the people that are, you know, and another big reason why they're, you know, you mentioned they need money, but a lot of them need money because of the opioid crisis that we're in right now.
They have been,
you know, they get the pills and then the pills get taken away and
mm-hmm.
then they start doing heroin and then the money dries up. And then the only thing that they can do is they're not going to be able to get enough heroin by working an $8, $9 or whatever the minimum wage is, $10 an hour job at McDonald's. They have to sell their bodies. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're ringing a dinner bell now for any kind of killer because they're just able to pick and choose who they want because there's a lot of women that are out there that are not necessarily quote street savvy or have street smarts that have to
mm-hmm.
go out there.
Exactly. And I challenge anybody who's sitting out there judging and say, well, they should not have gotten on drugs in the first place and they just need to tough it out. Just kick the habit. You try and be addicted to heroin or to an opiate and then try and go cold turkey and kick the habit. You feel like you will die. It's like from what I've been told, it's the most painful, god-awful. It's like you're wrung like a washcloth. And that's the desperation. That's why they need that fix. And again, this is a whole other podcast we could do, how the government could help us step in and really cut this crisis way down. But again, whole other podcast. We'll do that sometime next year. Billy,
yeah.
Let's get to your podcast. Great podcast.
Yeah.
You're with an amazing host. You both are co-hosts, I guess. But you went shot up to number one immediately. Congratulations. I am
thank you very much.
Not the least bit surprised because you're very popular. You're incredibly good, as is former Detective Paul Holes. And the two of you together, it is a powerhouse. So tell us about your podcast.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, so we actually did the first two episodes back, you know, as kind of pilots in August. And it took a while to, with lawyers and contracts and everything like that, to get everything together. And it launched in April. So it was actually supposed to launch a little bit earlier. But it's sort of a natural extension of the audiobook. You know, when I was writing the audiobook, I was writing about these cases that I had done and I had solved, but I wanted to get into cases that I was still working on that I hadn't been able to solve yet and that the crowd could help with. And everybody was asking me, you know, want to do a podcast? And I really didn't want to do one. But then this sort of, you know, I became friends with Georgia and Karen at My Favorite Murder, and I was, you know, thinking about it, and I started mapping out like what a podcast would look like and who I'd want as a co-host. Right at the same time, they were starting this network, and they had actually asked me and said, you know what, don't do a podcast with anybody until you ask us first. And I said, you know what, as a matter of fact, I've actually written up this outline for this podcast where I want to use the crowd to help solve crimes, and here it is. And they freaked out about it, and then we just went from there. And Paul was a natural co-host for it, not only for the fact that I needed somebody that knew the science of it, because we're dealing so much with familial DNA on the podcast. It's really a combination of social media, which is my bailiwick, and familial DNA, which is his. And, we're kind of merging those two because we really see those two things as the two biggest breakthroughs in science and in crime, at least. Detection since DNA was actually used in criminal cases back in 85, 86. So I think that it was kind of natural. Me and Paul had a really good rapport together because, you know, we worked on the when I was helping finish Michelle's book with her researcher, Paul Haynes. And we, you know, we just had a good connection, and we like hanging out with each other. And it seemed like the thing to do.
And Billy, can I ask a question?
Oh, go ahead, Levi.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm very interested in the Golden State Killer case, and I think that was one of the first cases that, you know, where we see that, you know, genealogy websites and familial DNA can be used to catch a killer and solve some of these cold cases, because for a long time people had written off the Golden State Killer as someone that will remain anonymous, that will never be caught. And then out of the blue, he was captured, and it got everybody excited. And we just seen a cold case in Alabama of two young women that were murdered, and that case was solved as well. So it's very promising what has happened with using DNA to crack some of these cold cases and using these genealogy databases to crack them. It's really exciting. Do you think that is something that law enforcement is now taking advantage of more often?
No, absolutely. And I knew, because we had his DNA and we had a decent amount of his DNA, and I said, you know, whenever we would go on book events, people would always ask, will he ever be caught? And I said, yeah, he'll be caught within 5 years. Because of familial DNA. Little did I know he was going to be caught within. Actually, I remember answering that question, and he was probably being in Chicago the night that he was arrested, and he was probably being arrested like within 5 minutes of me answering that question.
Oh, my gosh. That's wild.
And, you know, because they had it, and I knew it was there, and I knew the answer was behind the locked door of 23andMe and Ancestry.com, that you couldn't get in there. We were trying to. We were knocking on that door as hard as we could. But all it took was somebody, you know, a third cousin, fourth cousin, to put the information that they got from one of those companies and then put it up into a public database like GEDmatch. And now the floodgates are open for justice. And I just wish that more – we've solved around 40 now, not myself personally, but, you know, across the country I'm talking about, of these cases, of these older cases. But there's so many more that can be solved, and it's just a matter of education and resources, and not just with murders. It's also for sexual assaults too. You know, when we talk about ending the backlog, you know, they've ended the backlog, which means that they process those kits and maybe they put them into CODIS, but are they actually going that step further and doing a familial search? And that's another thing that needs to be done.
You have an HBO series coming out about the Golden State Killer case as well. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Actually, the day, like what I was talking about with the day that he was caught, was the first day we started filming that. And that was before we knew. So they were just following us. We were all in Chicago doing a book event. It was myself, Paul Haynes, Patton Oswalt, Michelle's husband, and Gillian Flynn, who wrote the foreword for the book. And we were all in Chicago, and we did this event, and Michelle's family was there, and they were filming us and everything, and it was a good event. And I got back, and then the, you know, I got a message that there's a press conference, and it started to sort of snowball. And I had to text message Liz Garbus, who is the director. And I told her, listen, I know we just met 6 hours ago, but I think this case was just solved. And I, you know, like, I'm not a maniac. This is like, I didn't want her to think that every 6 hours I was going to be texting her saying that this case was solved. And it was just so crazy that we were able to get at least a little bit of footage of us before it was solved. And then, you know, it's following Michelle, you know, it's telling Michelle's story and telling the Golden State Killer story at the, you know, sort of at the same time, and her dedication towards it, while at the same time talking about what this guy was doing and how he was able to elude people for so long. So it's going to be 6 parts, 7 parts. It's going to be really, really good. And it's probably going to come out in 2020 at some point. Not quite sure.
Wow. When. Yeah.
Congratulations.
You
boy,
know, that's a scary case. That's one of the most scary cases that I've looked into, because we had a guy that played cat and mouse with police. He would harass victims, harass law enforcement, very sadistic the way that he committed these crimes. And I would imagine that the family of the victims and the people that survived these attacks were just sad that their family members were murdered, but overjoyed that this guy was caught decades later. I mean, I can't imagine what they felt when he was finally arrested.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I've talked with a few of them, both survivors and also that their parents have been murdered or their sister has been murdered. And it's just, you know, I think some of them had hope, some of them didn't have hope. But once it happened, and just seeing this feeble man with a small wiener, too. So I think both of them.
You gotta love that. Gotta love it.
And I think that, you know, it's also been able to help some of the other survivors who haven't become public. They've come out public now, and there's a support system there with the sister survivors and everything. So I think it's in that respect, it's great. He was terrifying. He attacked people in their most protective state, the place that you think you're the safest, which is not only home, but in your bed. And next to your loved one, next to your husband or your boyfriend, you can't get any more safer than that. That's it. And that guy got off on.
And that's what was so scary and terrifying about him. Does your podcast, does it air every other week?
No, it airs every week.
Oh, that's great. Okay. And we'll give the address and where people can listen here.
On Monday, and then another one on Monday.
Wonderful. Fantastic. Let's talk about your book. It's an audio book, and it is, like you said at the very beginning, you give instructions on how citizen detectives should go about things. One of the big issues we have at Web Sleuth, I don't think it's an issue, but a lot of other people do, is people complain about our rules all the time. But if we didn't have rules, we wouldn't be taken seriously. And we're still not taken seriously by a lot of law enforcement agencies, but we're working on that. When you deal with the internet, you don't know who's going to come out of this pool of people. And it could be somebody who has some serious issues, and they're harassing the police and they're harassing the victims. And you can't have that. And you can't go on rumor, and you can't post things about innocent people. There are all types of rules you need to follow. And for us to be taken seriously, they have to follow these rules, because every time there is a nut that comes in and harasses people and harasses the police department and interferes with a case, guess what? They say, it was somebody from Web Sleuth. It was somebody, a citizen detective.
Exactly.
Yeah. And let's talk about the rules and what you try and teach in your book.
Yeah, I've got three and a half rules, really. The first is never name names in public. That's the number one. That's the biggie. That's where you get in trouble. You don't say, what about this guy, and put a link to their Facebook page, or what about this girl, put their link to their Facebook page. You just don't do it. You don't talk about it. If you find something, you send it to the authorities.
Mm-hmm.
The second is you don't reach out if you have information to the victim's families or the victims. You just don't do that. You send it to the authorities, because then you can get into vigilante situations or anything. So those are the two biggies. The third is you don't put your, you know, you be safe. You don't put yourself in harm's way. You don't go undercover. You don't do any of this silliness. You're not a vigilante. And the fourth is you be civil with each other, and you don't dox each other. You know, everybody becomes very invested in these cases and very protective over their own theories. You don't want them to, you know, you don't want to be shown up by anybody else. But at the end of the day, that's real pettiness. And what you want to do is you want to, you know, we're all up to the same thing, which is justice.
Mm-hmm.
You need to check that. And, check it at the door. You're not going to you can't expect credit. It's going to be a one-way street if you're working with a detective. You're going to give him all the information you have. He's going to give you, most of the time, he's going to give you nothing. And that's just the way it's going to be, and you have to accept that. And those are the big rules for me.
And those are perfect rules. And if everybody followed those, we would never have a problem. But you have to ask yourself, why are you doing this? If you're doing this for the attention and the adulation and the fame that you think you're going to find, stop now, because you are so wrong for coming in and trying to do that. You have to accept, like you said, Billy, you have to accept that nobody's even going to know your name, and you might do a ton of work and the detective will get all the credit. You got to accept that. And you can't,
you can't be
petty with each other. I can't tell you how many hundreds, if not thousands of people we've had to ban at Web Sleuth because they get petty and they start, you know, arguing, and oh my God, it just makes me crazy. And that's in your book. And then, and if you really do want to try and do something, you need to pick up this audio book. Now, when it will become available, when?
April 11th.
Okay.
But
well,
you can pre-order now.
Go ahead. You can pre-order now.
You can pre-order it only at audible.com. It's audible.com/chasedarkness, or on Amazon. And you have to pre-order the audiobook, not the print version. The print version doesn't come out for a really long time. So the audiobook, and it's read by me, Karen Kilgara from My Favorite Murder does the foreword. And it really is. I mean, if you like The Murder Squad, it really is sort of the prequel to The Murder Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And but it also, you know, stands on its own, and you learn a lot about not only, you know, my relationship with Michelle and finishing her book, and my relationship with Paul and meeting Paul and working on the Golden State Killer case, but also the Allenstown 4 case, the Bear Brook murders. And the work, you know, that was sort of like my white whale as we keep going, and I'm still working on that case. And also some of the cases
that I worked on in
the very beginning. What's that?
What is that case? Give us a little background.
The Allenstown 4 case, which is the four bodies that were found in barrels in Allenstown, New Hampshire in 1985 and in 2000. And it was a case that has haunted people for years because it was a woman and three children. Nobody knew who they were. There were no missing persons reports about them. And they were all killed with blunt force trauma to the back of the head. And, you know, I talk about how we were able to identify who they are yet, but able to identify who their killer was. And we go through all of that.
Now, why did you choose to do an audiobook first?
Because, you know, the what we're doing with true crime is very intimate. And the idea of, I like to think, and I would always, first of all, I read audiobooks, or I listen to audiobooks more than I actually read, just because, you know, you can do other things while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's very much like I'm telling you a story in the back of a bar, and I'm telling you, listen, this is what's going on. This is how you do this. This is how you solve this case. Or this is how I solve this case, and I want to tell you this. And, you know, when you're listening to it in headphones or in your car or at home or something, and I'm sort of just tell, you know, it's just me and you. It's just me and you, me and the listener, and I'm just telling a story, and it's really the oldest form of communication. And I thought it was the more powerful way to go about it than doing just a print book and just putting it out that way.
Mm-hmm. Levi, do you want to jump in here? I'm sure you are bursting with questions. I don't mean to not go to you. I just get wrapped up and forget my whole world around me.
It's an enlightening conversation. I agree with Billy that audiobooks, and I think it's the same with podcasts, exploding in popularity, especially in the true crime genre. And a lot of that is because people can listen anytime they want to, whereas with television, you actually had to, you know, make an appointment and sit down and actually watch. And, you know, you're sort of like dedicated to watching it. But with podcasts, you can listen while you're doing other things. You know, people listen while they're working out, while they're, you know, doing chores around the house, while they're picking up their kids from school on their commute. And I think that that is why podcasts and audiobooks are becoming so popular, and it's a good tool to take some of these cold cases and feature them and spotlight them on podcasts and audiobooks and get the information out there. And we've seen so many cases where new evidence has emerged, suspects have been arrested in the midst of podcast highlighting and bringing, you know, more awareness to a case. Cases that have gone cold and people really don't think about them much anymore. And then a podcast comes along and does several episodes on them, and then arrests happened. And I think it's a good tool to utilize podcasts and audiobooks to get this information out there.
Yeah, and another great thing, particularly with the podcast and the audiobooks, is that you, as opposed to a television show where there's so many barriers of entry, there is a production company and the network, and they're all saying no to this. You know, there's no barrier. It's just me talking and telling a story, you know, without, you know, yes, I had an editor, but, and you don't need visuals. And I can't tell you how many times that, you know, I wasn't able to tell a story on television because I didn't have visuals for it. And that's one of the great things about podcasts, is that you don't need visuals. You can just tell the story the way it was intended. And then, you know, you can direct people to a social or a website or something like that, just to see a few photos.
About Facebook and using Facebook as part of your citizen detective group, do you find that Facebook is out of control as far as their Facebook groups go? I've had more really awful trauma happen to victims on Facebook groups than anywhere else. And if somebody gets a Facebook group going, like you said, Billy, they need to control it.
Yeah.
And haven't you found that just to be horribly hurtful?
Yes, it can be. And it all, you know, Facebook is, it's out of control only in the sense that because there's a lot of people on there. And really Facebook, and I've noticed this just with myself and the way I used it, is that I'm not publishing that much on Facebook itself, but I am publishing things in groups. In the groups that I'm, you know, I'm in my crime solving groups. I'm in my Disney Imagineering groups that I like. I'm in my Manchester City Football Club groups, like just the things that I enjoy. And when I look at the groups, some of them are very tight knit, but as they get bigger and bigger, you might start getting people in there. And, you know, especially if you have some place that anybody can post, that it can get a little rowdy. And I think with Facebook groups, once it gets to a certain point, you have to have admins that are going to be able to accept or reject somebody's post, because then it could become like a total shit show. And it's just a matter of, you know, you're not going to vet, you know, you can vet people as much as possible in terms of asking them a couple questions about this or that when they're trying to join the group, but you don't know what their intentions are. You don't know whether this is some sort of sock puppet that they're going into. And you have seen some things that can be, you know, very hurtful or very disrespectful to victims. And I always try to put victims you know, front and center, and the audiobook's actually dedicated to the victims. That's the one dedication in the book. And I think that, you know, oftentimes we lose sight of that. And Facebook, unfortunately, is one of those places that you can lose sight of it. And it used to be that Facebook wasn't necessarily like that, because Twitter, you can have an anonymous Twitter account. And YouTube can be a total shit show because it's you can do an anonymous account. But with Facebook, it was usually you were connected to an account, and it was your person. But now, you know, a lot of people just don't care, and they're just willing to do whatever.
One thing that I've noticed with Facebook, especially in the Abby and Libby, the Delphi, Indiana double murders of those two little girls, is that people will just throw random people out there as, you know, the killer, and there's no evidence to back it up. It's just that they think.
Nothing behind it. Yep.
They think that the guy looks like the person in the sketch. And I've seen them, you know, go and harass people that they think are involved. And I've been invited to those groups, and I automatically leave. I don't want any parts of that. And I think that, you know, one thing that people should encourage is, if you do get involved in Citizen Detective, is just don't throw people randomly out there just because you have a hunch that they may have done it. And be responsible in what you post in these groups, because – if there's one bad apple, it kind of spoils the rest of the people that have good intentions, like you, Billy. That there needs to be like a crackdown on some of the things that people do when they just throw random people out there.
Right.
Absolutely. And that's the number one rule. You can't do that. That whole "what about this guy" scenario. Hey, look what I found, and this guy looks just like that. You know, either the photo that the girls, you know, who were so brave in taking, actually the video also that they were brave in capturing before they lost their lives. But not only that, but the sketch as well. You just can't do that. You know, I've gotten tips, and I take the tips, and I funnel them to the FBI, and hopefully they'll be able to find somebody soon for that case. So, you know, I think we'll get that case. I mean, there's too good of evidence for it not to be solved, but, you know, it's a heartbreaker. But then, yeah, I mean, a lot of people want to help, but they're just helping in the wrong way when they're naming names like that.
Exactly. And let's just talk about that case for a moment. Here we have a picture, we have audio, and we have one of the best sketches I think I've ever seen drawn for a suspect. And nothing. Crickets. There is nothing there. Somebody has got to recognize this guy. And I know that that Libby's grandmother is on Facebook and on Twitter, and she'll post his picture and say, maybe today is the day. Or today, I think it's today will... with any luck, today will be the day. And she's always trying to get the picture of this guy out there. I cannot for the life of me figure out why somebody hasn't come forward and said, I know him. I mean, the cops have said there's just nothing. And I don't, it seems like a cold case now, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, I put out something a little while back, and I got what I thought was a really good tip, and I get a ton of tips, and I like this tip a lot. It was somebody that had a prior that looked just like him, that was from, you know, within 300 miles of there. And so I called up the FBI, the dedicated FBI number. I was on hold for 25 minutes. When I finally got in touch with somebody and somebody picked up the phone, they actually said, you can't send it to us. And I said, why can't I email it to you? No. And they actually said this. They said, well, can you describe a picture to us? I was like, are you kidding me? Can you describe the picture to us? I got the picture right here of this guy. Yeah. So then I was able to finally get it to them, but I also sent it to her sister, because her sister, one of the, I'm trying to think of which sister it was. It's Libby's sister. Yeah. Is very active on social. So I sent it to her, and I was just like, listen, this is the deal. FBI has it. Let me cross my fingers FBI has it. I was able to get to them, but I wanted to get to you too, because this guy looks pretty good. And, you know, you have to wonder that, you know, there are a lot of cases that you see that there are people that the police are pretty sure that this guy might have been, you know, in the area, but there might not be any physical evidence attaching him to it or whatever. So, I'm hoping that that's the case. I'm hoping that they just have their eyes on one or two people and they're just waiting for them to slip up, or it's what they call a wire case, where they're sending in somebody to, you know, hopefully get a confession out of him or something like that surreptitiously. Who knows? But it it's something that has to, you know, it probably is our biggest mystery right now in the last 5 years, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do you know what happened to your tip? Do you know if it was followed up on, or do you think they
know? I mean, that's the thing. Remember, if you don't have a relationship with a cop like that, and especially with the FBI, I don't know if it was followed up on. I've got to get back in touch with Libby's sister to see what she might have done with it. But, you know, as far as the FBI goes, you know, the FBI has it. And what I always tell the police, and with that respect, that was not a name. That was just somebody that, you know, I wanted to go to the victim's family and say, hey, listen, you know, I'm not quite sure if the FBI is going to do anything with this, but I want to get this to you so it doesn't fall through the cracks. Also, what I always tell victims' families is that the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and you've got to, you know, if you have something, you've got to call up the detectives a lot. You've got to become a bit of a pain in the ass because they've got a lot of stuff going on. You have to constantly remind them that, you know, this case should be your top.
That's absolutely right. And what about the FBI and citizen detectives? It kind of sounds like they're more resistant than your local police.
Yeah, I mean, they've got so many layers of rules and regulations that they have to deal with that I think that they're going to be the last bastion of wanting to use citizens. But they've tried before. I mean, they put out ciphers before and tried to get people to solve them. It's not like they haven't used citizens to try and help them when they've been stuck. So it's not necessarily that they don't believe in it, but on a massive scale, not on a one-by-one basis, but on a massive scale, they're going to be the most hesitant just because they do have so many regulations.
Yeah, it sounds like the regulations might be biting them in their behind, maybe cutting off their nose to spite their face type situation. Levi, I heard you wanted to, seems like you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
Yes. What case that you have, you know, written about or covered stays with you that you would like to see solved the most?
That would be the Owl's Head Park murder. So there was a woman who was found murdered in Owl's Head Park, Brooklyn, named Jennifer Cohen, about 3 years ago. And there was great video of her attacker, who they think was her attacker, walking with her, and then of him walking sort of away from the area. And the video was just incredibly clear, and I thought I was going to get this guy in a week just because the video was so clear. And it's been 3 years. I've probably spent about $4,000 on it, $5,000, and I still can't find him. But you can do a search for Owl's Head Park Killer or Owl's Head Park Murder on Facebook, and you could find the Facebook page and share it. Share, you know, some of the ads that I've got on there. And I continue, you know, my fear is that the guy has probably skipped the country. He's gone someplace, but you know, that's a case that has haunted me for a while.
And let's talk a little bit about the podcast again. What day does it come out, and where can people find it?
Yes. So the podcast comes out every Monday at 3 a.m. Eastern time, I believe, or something like that. Yeah. So, and it comes out, I think you can get it on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and maybe even Google Play too. So you can get it on all this.
Is Paul Holes kind of surprised at all of this adulation and basically a fan club that has formed for him? How is he handling all of this?
Yeah, he's surprised. I think he gets a kick out of it a little bit, but you know, you know, when you're so used to, especially with the GSK case where he was working on it for over 20 years and you're doing it in a lot of solitude, a lot of times he was the only guy doing it. So to be around people, just being around people, just having people talking about you is just strange. And it's the same, similar for me as well. When people are, you know, when people hear the audiobook and they're going to know a lot about me, it's just so many of these cases that I've been working and so many of the stories that I've done, you know, I'm really working by myself, and I'm working them by myself, and I'm writing them by myself, and then, you know, they'll get sent into an editor, but it's a pretty solitary existence. So it's actually kind of nice for us to have kind of people around.
Well, I hate this word, but I cannot think of another word at the moment. You, both of you, have some really major true crime groupies. And I don't mean that in the negative sense. I just mean there are people that follow both of you everywhere and do whatever you ask. And I think that's wonderful. And I'm sure you are just surprised as Paul Holes, right?
Well, I mean, the thing is, what I've always said about true crime as a genre is that it was so unbalanced because it had all of these supervillains, Bundy, Gacy, the Zodiac Killer, Jack the Ripper. But then where are the superheroes? And the superheroes are often very nameless because they're just the guys that arrested them or were able to capture them. And, you know, you didn't know. We never really put them on a pedestal the same way that we put these other monsters. So it was almost like having an Avengers movie where you had no heroes and you just had Thanos and that was it, you know. Or, you know, a Star Wars movie where it's just the bad guys and there's no, you know, the good guys are all anonymous and you don't get to know them. So, you know, I think that, you know, I want people to look at Paul Holes. I want kids to look at Paul Holes and say, I want to do that when I grow up.
Yeah.
Or look at Michelle McNamara and say, I want to be her when I grow up. And, you know, I think in that respect, it's nothing but positive.
You're right. It is positive. And we need these people to come out, whether they're super fans. I guess we should just call them super fans. Super fans are people who want to be involved and to help. I've noticed this, and Levi, I want you to weigh in on this. Citizen detectives, there are a lot of them out there, like you said, Billy, in the beginning, very, very smart. And there is a large, large group of them that do things like build maps, ping sheets with cell phones, do an enormous amount of work. And not only do they not want any credit, they don't ever even want to use their real first name. I find that charming. I find that charming and impressive and heartwarming. Right, Levi?
Absolutely. Yes. Now, the anonymous ones that are just, you know, doing all of this work, they don't want to be involved, but they can identify and they're saying, I have a skill or I have the time and I can put this together, both the skill and the time, saying I can put these two things together. Just don't put my name in it or whatever, but I think I can help. That's fantastic.
It is wonderful. Levi, are you still with us? You're there?
Yes, okay, I agree. Good. And I think that, you know, a lot of times people that follow true crime, they get, you know, stereotyped as, you know, weirdos that are into darkness and people that are, you know, fangirling out over Ted Bundy, but that is not the majority of the people that follow true crime stories. The majority of them really want to see the killers caught, the bad guys put in prison, justice for the victims' families, cold cases solved, and the outliers, that's not the majority. The people that are in it for sinister reasons and want to fangirl over, you know, serial killers and stuff like that, that is not the majority of the people that are involved in true crime stories and follow them and want to get involved. A lot of people have pure intentions and they want to find out what happened to bring closure to a lot of these victims' families.
Absolutely.
Exactly right.
Yep.
And the thing is, now with the internet, people can do that. Everybody always says, what can I do? You know, when we were all growing up, we didn't have the internet. And now you can do such fabulous, incredible work. And again, it has obviously changed the world. And as we slowly break into law enforcement and there becomes the meeting and understanding of the minds of citizen detectives and law enforcement, we're going to see, I believe, an explosion of cold cases being solved. We've just got to get them to open that door and let us help them. Levi and Billy, Web Sleuth has hundreds of thousands of people waiting to do something. And some of them have master's degrees. Some of them are shut in and they can't leave because of a physical ailment, but they're just the smartest person in the world. Everything in between. We're sitting here. We're free. Give us something. We have had police departments give us a T-shirt, actually two police departments giving us two different T-shirts, and we found out everything they needed to know within just a few moments. And one T-shirt they've been working on for 20 years. And that's the type of stuff we can do. And like you said, Billy, at the beginning, go into a local police department, take a few people with you, offer to input all of the handwritten notes from the 80s and 90s. that would be a huge relief.
Yeah.
There is so much we can do. And Billy, with your book coming out, I think that is going to really make the citizen detective movement, I guess, if you will, completely explode in a positive way. People are going to understand. And your book, it's an audio book. It'll be available, what was the date again?
April 11th.
And it's called Chase Darkness With Me. And it's
right.
all
it's
about...
Only available on Audible and or on Amazon, yeah.
Levi, do you have any other questions for Mr. Jensen?
No, he's answered all of them. I just want to say, Billy, that I'm a big fan of yours, and I really appreciate everything that you do. Keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you, Levi, so much. I do appreciate that. Thank you.
And I agree. You do amazing work, and you're going to really help this. Again, this has just been my thing, is trying to get law enforcement to understand that we're not the bad guys. We old biddies like Murder, She Wrote. We are intelligent people that want to help. We can't control everybody that goes to them, but you got to just deal. They have to deal with crazies anyway during the day and
exactly.
night. Why not,
yeah, the
crazy. You know?
Exactly. Yes. 99 of it is going to be good information. We're going to have to deal with the 1%, but yes, absolutely.
Exactly. Billy, is there anything else you would like to say in closing?
No, that's it. Just that, you know, I love the Web Sleuth community and, you know, the fact that you guys do follow the rules and, you know, I really think that everybody that is on Web Sleuth, that is either a power user or even, you know, somebody that just comes on, you know, once a week or so is really, really going to enjoy the audiobook. I really do. I wouldn't just be saying that.
And I agree. And like I said, I think it's going to change. It's going to change things in a positive way. And we're going to see a tide come in of citizen detectives that will do a lot of good. Billy Jensen, Levi Page, thank you both very, very much. We'll have you on again real soon, okay? Oh, and we'll put a link up.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Tricia.
You're welcome. We'll put a link up to your book and a link up to your podcast as well, okay?
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, don't say I didn't warn you. It was a jam-packed session today on Web Sleuth Radio, and we're going to do it again really soon. But I want to remind you of something. I'm kind of excited. No, I'm not kind of excited. I'm really excited and absolutely honored to be the new host of Sword and Scale. Now, if you go to swordandscale.com, you'll have about, 12 to 13 million different options on where you can find Sword and Scale on the internet. At least that many. I counted. Anyway, thank you, everybody. We'll see you on websleuths.com. Stay out of trouble, okay? Bye-bye now.